Let's Lock, do
talk,
it.
Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah. African American Empowerment Saturday. That's right. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Jermaine Man Marvin Rowan. Stay alive. Discussion today. It's news, brothers and sisters. Call somebody. We got Dr. Bruce. Got a conversation today. You won't want to miss it. Oh, yeah. All I got is and better love is necessary. What we want. Yeah. Yeah, there's no better love than for self and kind. No better love. It's African American Empowerment Saturday. Again, it's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for African Americans, brothers and sisters, you, me, us, we, and we have to understand the importance of what it is that's happening in our communities as we face our reality here in America. Let's talk today about the pillars of the NAAEA, right? Political, which is politics, to have a political agenda wherever you are in this country. Economics, that's the E, we're spelling out peace. Economics, an economic agenda where we, as the descendants of Africans who were brought to this country in the form of chattel and chattel slavery, have to now recover from the experiences. It's just true, right? The experiences that, again, that we see from the recordings that we're going to talk about today that many of you all saw. If you didn't see it, I mean, you don't have to, but hey, well, we'll talk about it anyway. Listen, right? Athletics, you got to take care of yourself, health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, relevant cultural programs like this one, and then education, comprehensive education. So today we're going to have a panel discussion about this experience that we're having in this country, right? The reality that we face as African Americans in terms of the reality of being policed, right? A young brother lost his life at the hands of black police officers, right? That's the reality of it. And we're going to have to think about what that experience is like for us as we've been experiencing this type of behavior back in slavery, right? When you look at the film and the documentation, what it reminds me of just personally is when a slave catcher catch you from running, this is what you get. You don't run away from the plantation. You don't run away from my power. You don't run away from my authority. Really quickly, I want to do the tenets of the NAAEA, right? It's African American Empowerment Association, and I want to honor my brother Stan Macklin with the Stan Macklin moment before we get started. Hang on, I'll be right back.
Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah,
we
got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
That's an honor, my brother Stan Macklin. He's not here with us, but he's here in spirit, and I recognize him on every show. Man did so much to me, mentoring, brethren. But now to the topic at hand. We need what I would call the triple ADL, the African American Defamation League, Anti-Defamation League, right? And we have to have our own organizations that support us in situations that we find ourselves in. Now, this is just me. We're going to have a panel discussion. I'm going to bring Brother George in just a minute for the Woody Lynch and Kwanzaa segment as we move forward. But the reality is, if you looked at the film, and you heard what was said and how this brother was treated, right? The show, again, is black-on-black violence, the psychodynamics. Listen, the psychodynamics of black-on-black violence, right? This time it's brothers in blue, but we do it on the streets all the time. The psychodynamics of black self-annihilation, because we're doing it to ourselves, in the service of white domination or white supremacy. That's this reality of it. You cannot treat yourself like what we've seen, right? And as Brother Booker said, I'm just being transparent today. Those brothers treated that man, I said man, like a nigger that had no meaning, no purpose, no family, nothing, right? You take you from your culture, from your community, and you're nothing but chattel, or you're nothing but a cow or a horse, right? They treat animals better than they treated that brother, right? But this is brothers doing it to us, and we're going to talk about that today. So call a friend, right? This is a live dialogue discussion. We got Dr. Bruce in the house today, but we also have two retired police officers, one from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area, and then one from the Durham, North Carolina area, that's going to bring us insight from a police perspective, but also from an African-American perspective as well. So I want you to be engaged, right? We're going Slido today as well, but I want to hear from you, the listener, today on how you feel about it and what we need to do as a result of solutions, but also thinking about, again, how do we recapture the African mind as we continue to move forward. Slido today is 3436344. Again, 3436344. If you want to call in, 845-277-9250. I'll say it again slowly. 845-277-9250 is the number to call, right? Call somebody. This is a serious dialogue that we need to have with ourselves. Is real issues that impact us no matter where we are, because the treatment is still the same. Rodney King, right? Look how long that was ago, and it's still the same thing. George Floyd, look how long ago, and it's still the same thing. Slave catchers, look how long ago, but it's still the same thing. I'm going over to Brother George, and I'm going to do the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment, my favorite part. Brother George, come on in, brother. Talk to me. Oh, yeah. Ain't going nowhere. My brother, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm making it. I'm disturbed, but we're here to talk about it. What you got for me today? How are you, first of all?
That's right. I'm doing good, brother. I'm doing good. Today, the Kwanzaa principle from the Nguza Saba is Nia, which is purpose. To make as our collective vocation the building and developing of our community in order to restore our people to their traditional greatness. I love it. The symbol and its name, Nia, the symbol and its name have become well known through the movie called Sankofa. And though numerous African American artistic and commercial usage of the word, literally it means it is never too late to go back and fetch what has been lost. It has been used to encourage African Americans to go back and reclaim our past, our heritage, and our ancient African wisdom. Through the knowledge of our past, we can gain a greater understanding of our purpose in the present and our destiny as individuals and as a people. Now, today, I'm going to read from two books. I always like to, when I'm talking about, I couldn't find my Black on Black Violence by Dr. Amos Wilson, but I want to read from one of his other books because I always feel like that he's always on time. I often say in this regard that if there was not a direct relationship between history and money, a direct relationship between history and power, history and rulership, history and domination, then why is it that the European rewrote history? Why is it that the European wants to take our history away from us? Why is it that the European wants to rewrite our history and distort it? Why is it that he doesn't want to present it at all? Apparently, the rewriting, the distortion, and distilling of our history must serve vital economic, political, and social functions for the European. And or else he would not bother try so hard to keep our history away from us and to distort it in our own minds. Let us meditate on these issues, and I think we'll come to the realization that there is a direct relationship between history, economics, political, and social development. Now, the next book I'm going to read from is it's a quote by Malcolm that I think is very fitting for today's discussion. By making our people in the Western Hemisphere hate Africa, we ended up hating ourselves. We hated our African characteristics. We hated our African identity. We hate our African features, so much so that you would find those of us in the West who would hate the shape of our nose. We would hate the shape of our lips. We would hate the color of our skin and the texture of our hair. This was a reaction, but we didn't realize that it was a reaction. And so, you know, basically he was saying that they conditioned us to think like this, and we don't even realize that we was conditioned to hate ourselves. And I think that an example of what happened with that brother with the police officers was self-hatred. They seen a black man and the hatred that they have for themselves because of the way that they've been conditioned, they were able to beat him down like that to the point where they beat him to the brink of death, and then eventually he died. And to me, I can't understand how black men could do something like that for no apparent reason. There was nothing called for them to go to that length, unless there's some type of self-hatred working inside of us. So, Brother Marvin, I'd like to move on and get to the show. But if you don't have, you know, any questions for me, then it's back to you.
Yeah. Thank you, Brother George. Again, we're talking about the issue that happened with the young brother, a father, right, a son. What is going on with us? Five African-American, white police officers beat a brother to death. And for what I saw, it was not enough provocation for this brother to be beat to death, right, over a traffic stop. Now, if you saw it, right, I want you to chime in, right, but I want you to stop for a minute if you're listening and call or text somebody to get involved with this conversation, because this is the kind of dialogue that we need, right, for growth and improvement. And for some of us, it's just release, right? So we got some guest panelists today, former retired police officers, right? One, Brother Kwesi from the Milwaukee, Wisconsin area, right? Let me bring him in now. Brother, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Kwesi Craft, yeah.
All right. Kwesi, Kwesi. I'm going to get
it
right.
We're going to work on
hopefully
that.
Hopefully it's today. Kwesi, all right.
Yes.
Brother Kwesi from the Wisconsin area. And then we're going to bring in Brother Thaxton, who is in the Durham, North Carolina, and worked in law enforcement as well. So let me bring him in as well. Kwesi, Brother Kwesi, and Brother Thaxton. Brother Thaxton, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, welcome to the show, brothers. Former retired police officers that have served our communities well, and they have a perspective that we're going to share today. And last but not least in our panel is Dr. Bruce Bridges. Dr. Bruce, welcome to the show. Are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here. I'm right here.
All right.
thank you all for joining us, Brother George will be a part of the panel as well. So what I want to do is open the show, and I'll start with Brother Thaxton, if you don't mind, and then Brother Kwesi. Hope I got that right. And then Brother George, and then finally Dr. Bruce. Let's talk about, right, your points of view and perspective on what you saw. Let's hold it to maybe 3 to 5 minutes, and then we'll go right into getting our callers in as well. 845-277-9250 is African-American Empowerment. Call somebody. Slido today is 3436-344. And we'll start, Brother Thaxton. Give us a brief introduction and then your perspective on what it is that you saw as a black man and as a former officer of the law.
Well, like you said, I am a retired officer here in Durham, North Carolina. It's a progressive area. We've had several black police chiefs in the past, including the one that's out in Memphis, Tennessee at this current moment. Now, my personal perspective was I was quite surprised to see a group attack one man so viciously in this day and time. Tactics like that were something you heard about or read about from way in the past, usually committed by unlawful officers. Personally, I was stunned. I was just overly surprised. Go ahead.
All right. Unlawful officers is the term that he used. All right. Brother Kwesi.
Hey, how's it going? I wouldn't call them unlawful. I would just think that they have been conditioned. And I think that in the beginning, you made mention of slave catchers. And they've always had somebody black participate in catching the slaves. And when somebody ran away and they caught them, they would do the worst possible things possible. And as a matter of fact, so much so, when they hung and lynched somebody, they would excuse kids from school so they can attend. So that's part of the white supremacy that we're dealing with. And most people, especially black people, law enforcement people, they want to keep their jobs. They've never made that kind of money and so forth and this and that. And even when they're retired, they don't want to say much because, you know, they know that they can still be, they can go be gone after some kind of way, shape, or form. And so it's tough for some people. Me, when I was on the department, like I said, I was the first black officer hired. I was hired in 1989. I served for 24 and a half years. I was forced out because I physically stopped people on the streets when they did things that were wrong to innocent people. Now, I wasn't the only one. Other officers did the same thing, but they were white. And, you know, as me being black, I was getting in trouble for stopping people. So they basically forced me out. And my last, actually 2.5 years, they basically kept me on suspension to use up all my comp time, holiday, and all that other kind of stuff so that would reduce my pension and so forth. So I lost a lot. And then that way, and if I would have fought them, they would have dropped my insurance and everything. And my wife had just passed from cancer during that time. But again, they have not changed their methods and what they do. And in regards to that beating of that young man, these black officers, again, they operate under the influence of white supremacy. They want to endear themselves to their coworkers and so forth. That's just such a common act that I see all the time. And in the history of policing, you won't find a black officer chasing down somebody white, armed or even unarmed, and beating them and killing them. You don't even read about those kind of things. But with us, you get a black person, and they'll, why did he run? You know, they beat them, they kill them. And then it's not just them. It's a whole bunch of people. If you look even at the George Chauvin thing where, you know, people are standing there watching, and we know tactically police officers don't put their hands in their pockets while they have their knees nailed on somebody's neck. If this person is a threat, then why are your hands in your pockets? And you're not supposed to be laying on top of anybody with their bodies down. We learned that back from Ernest Lacey back in the 80s. So a lot of the things that were done there tactically were wrong, And we've got training and put out different standards as to why we need to do things different. And I'll let you come with questions or whatever.
All right. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. That's honest and transparent. I like that. All right, Brother George, I want to ask you a question really quickly in terms of what you saw, but I also want to ask you about negative social contracts and how did you see that carried out in this instance?
Well, what I seen was a young black man being beaten unmercifully by, I think it was five others, because they said it was a total of nine officers out there or something. I didn't see the other officers get involved, but I know they said that they were there. But the negative contract was something that I learned about when I was in drug rehabilitation. And one of the things that keeps you is when you hold on to the negative contracts, like not being willing to tell on someone that's destroying your opportunity to be successful with getting clean. And you're both in the same program. And so instead of you calling them out and saying, you know, you be getting high, you know, sneaking behind the building and getting high, and you hold on to that. And that negative contract is what keeps you from making progress with your life. And so with those officers, they had a bunch of negative contracts. And they appeared to me, I'm not an officer, but they appeared to me to be talking in code when they said, yeah, and he reached for my gun, and then he swung on me. They was like basically telling the other officers, like, this is what the story is going to be. So just remember what I said. But it sounded like that they had well planned out how they was going to do things when they hit the street. And so I think that they got all kinds of negative contracts with them, probably planting guns. You know, I can't just say that to be a fact, but those are the kind of things that are negative contracts. And it appeared to me if they would go to that length to be the innocent man over a traffic stop like that, you know, I could imagine, you know, the kind of message that they might want to send to one of the 17 or 18-year-old hoodlums, you know, that's on the street. You know, so that's what I seen, you know, was a bunch of negative contracts just all over the place.
Thank you, Brother Joe.
Yeah, I'll respond to that.
Former officers mentioned the pack mentality, right? And I want to, you know, hold that point for a minute, Brother Daxon. But I'm going to bring Dr. Bruce in for a minute as we talk about the psychodynamics, right? Because what the bottom line is, the origin, and this is what we need to get to in terms of recapturing the African mind, is that the acts of these brothers are stimulated, motivated, due to white supremacy and domination in their behavior. Dr. Bruce.
All right, thank you, brother Marvin, for this good program you're having today. Thank you very much for putting it together, brother. I really appreciate it because it's right on time and also relates directly to the Recapturing the African Mind series, which is a part of my program for today. But, you know, I'm glad we decided to be current today because this is what's going on. Now, I just want to repeat what you said, and that is black on black violence, the psychodynamics of black self-annihilation in the service of white domination. Now, before I explain that, I want to just mention that most of the people who are on the panel and people who are listening to this program, wherever they may be, whatever part of the world they're in, who saw this, they saw black officers. Those were not black officers who beat, as Brother Saxon said, unmercifully, the brother there, Tyree. They were not black officers. They were black officers of skin, but they were not black officers in their mentality. because had they been black officers in their mentality, they would not have done what they did. These were white officers in the skin of black, young, ignorant Memphis, Tennessee men. Now, the psychodynamics of black self-annihilation, that word psychodynamics, I always like to make things clear. Psychodynamics is a theory which states that events in our childhood have a great influence on our adult lives, shaping our personality. Events that occur in childhood can remain in the unconscious and cause problems as adults. So when we talk about the psychodynamics of black self-annihilation, of black men beating black men, self-annihilating, killing yourself in the service of white domination, it has to go back to the coast and the shores of West Africa when the colonizers in the 14th and 15th century went into Africa and began to bring many of us out and enslave us on the plantations. They always destroyed the male children and the boys so because they knew that they would one day be threats. Even on the plantations, even on the ships, as we came across the Atlantic Ocean, the rebellions were led on the ships by strong African men and young African warriors, you see. So they had to destroy that element on a physical level. But now coming to America on the plantations, the same thing was done, and they even put a black overseer oft times over the slaves on the plantation. But now to again make sure that the black man and the black boy would never reach manhood and become a threat to this system of white domination, you see. So what has happened is, since that's not the case now in terms of the physical destroying of black men by having slave patrols and killing black men to the same extent as they were doing back in slavery, they kill us in the classroom. In the classroom, as young black men and women, actually, they grow us in this society to become gentlemen and to become reserved and to become conservative and not to question through our education and to go along with everything that we have been taught. This is what, and when this happens, therefore, a man never really grows up to become a black man, or a black woman never really grows up to become a strong black woman, because we have been taught to be otherwise. There's a reason that we become teachers, that we become techs in technical plants and on other jobs, or the reason that we become athletes, entertainers. We become athletes and entertainers, but athletes and entertainers with no consciousness. Athletes and entertainers who only want to perform, but who are not really human beings. Just shoot the ball. Just run me a touchdown, but don't take a stand against anything. The reason we operate that way is because we have been trained and taught that way. So the classroom has become the killing mechanism for the black man and woman. This is why Barry Gordy will say, what, I'm starting a record company, but I'm not starting a record company making black music. I'm just making music, you see. Isolate yourself or distance yourself from being as black as you possibly can, as Brother Kwasi said. Become distant from being black. Alienate yourself from your own community, as Brother Marshall Thacker said. You become alienated from your own community, and then it makes it easy for you to commit this crime that you're committing because you've been trained to do that. So when we see black officers, we're not really seeing black officers. We're seeing black officers who are in the service of white domination, as Brother Kwasi said. They would do anything to please their masters. So anyway, I'm let you open it up, and I could go on, but I'm just want to kind of lay that out first of all as to what really is happening here.
All right, Brother Thaxton, you had something that you wanted to mention.
Oh, about the pack. I wanted to hear about that too. That relates to what I was just talking about, right?
And listen to what Bruce was saying, and Dr. Bruce Bridges.
I'm going.
I can't refute it simply because we don't have time. But a lot of what he says is logical and makes sense. But a lot of times when you're dealing with individual officers, they have decisions to make. What kind of career they want, how they want to be out there on the street. Most black officers never forget that they are black officers. I don't mean dealing with the bullshit, the bull stuff that can occur in a station, but when you hit the street, how do you treat people that you were raised with? How do you treat people that look like you? I have issues when I see and hear officers mistreat people simply because of the color of the skin. Now, again, I was raised in a progressive area, same area that Bruce, Dr. Bridges is from. We were raised on different parts of the city. Experiences, like you said, can mandate how you become the person that you are and how you work once you start your work career. I'm not going to sit there and say every officer is the same because they're not. And we do have a lot of quality and good, honest, fair-minded black officers that will go through their career and do their job successfully and correctly without any undue injury to a person. And that's just my personal belief.
Okay, well, let's open it up a little bit, right? What we saw, right, from a policing standpoint, and I'll bring our brother Kwesi in now. From a policing standpoint, what we saw in the footage, is that normal police? Now, I know, and we all know that that has been typical experience. Now that we have cameras, we can see it more. But is that a part of the training regimen for some of the police agencies, or is that just rogue officers doing whatever they want to do?
That's not rogue officers. That's normal officers doing that. I am also a DAT officer, which is defense and arrest tactics. So I trained officers how to deal with confrontations. And on top of that, prior to that, law enforcement, I used to be a world champion fighter. I used to fight all over the world. I won world titles, kickboxing, and so forth. So I knew how to carry myself, and I didn't have to beat on somebody or whatever. I just didn't get a rise off of doing that. You know, when I did what I did it in the ring, you know, against another person, and, you know, that was, you know, it was a championship fight. Those were the things I did. I trained, I prepared to do those kind of things. In law enforcement, you go through training, and you have your schools in regards to interview and interrogation techniques you learn. You learn just so many different things. You even learn how to deliver a baby because you're the first responders and you respond to calls. You learn how to deal with domestic violence. You learn how to deal with all these tactical situations, felony stops, person fleeing. So you learn all these different techniques. And one of the things that we find that's most common when you're trying to teach somebody, one, they don't put a lot of time in teaching a lot of people, and people just do what they normally do. Like they talk about, like they got rid of strangulation techniques or chokes, things of that nature. I've performed those maneuvers on people on the street, and I've submitted them in a couple seconds. You know, that's how it works. But most officers, they don't want to learn. They all say that most of the training goes out the window, and they just do what they know they can get away with. And because of that, I forgot the terminology. I forgot the term. Where officers sued or whatever because of the it's a liability and not we're protected by the law, and because of that, and one of the other things that people mostly talk about is learn how to write your reports. And so when we look at these whole situations, and we're looking at these black officers because we see this and stuff like that, and like Dr. Bridges said, they were operating in the black skin, but they were operating under white supremacy. And this is what we have. You didn't get this kind of press over 147 shots. They even made a movie about that, where these black couple was in a car, and they thought that
it backfired, and they said that somebody shot at me, and all these white officers chased after this car several blocks, high rates of speed, endangering all kinds of people just to catch these black people that didn't do anything wrong. The car just backfired, and then shot at that car 147 times, killing them. One officer stood on top of the car and shot into that car 47 times. That's not something you do if you're,
wow,
you're afraid and your life is in danger. You know, we had the same thing with another young man that was running from the cops, and he was shot, I think, 80-something times. And they shot into a area where, you know, there was a playground and so forth and this and that. This was a 22-year-old young man that was running from him. You know, and you had eight officers involved. None of those officers have been charged with anything. None of the officers in the other, in the 147 shots in the Ohio incident were charged with anything. But look at the swift justice on these black guys, because that elevates, and then all the white people that you got talking about it and saying, oh, I've never seen anything. Are you kidding me? They do this all the time. The Jacob Blake situation in Kenosha. Officer walks up to them. They could have grabbed him, did all anything. And he shoots him a dozen times in the back, and then you get a black attorney from another district to come in, a DA, to justify the evil that he did? Oh, come on. I mean, so that's what we're looking at. These actions from, you know, they weren't operating in the mindset of black people. That certainly was the case in that situation.
So,
and
so
that's just,
what do you think happens, right? From a law enforcement perspective, you're a part of the team now. You're, you know, it's a career for you. It's a career path. And as a black man being in that field, right, what pressures do you guys, or have you felt any pressure to enforce law aggressively? So there's a difference. Let me just add this. Between protect and serve and policing. I feel the black community is policed, or the African-American community, people of color, and white communities and other communities are protected and served. What do you feel is the dichotomy between those two, if any?
I don't know if I should just continue, or brother, you want to go Thaxton?
Thaxton.
Yeah.
My personal belief hasn't changed. The black community is underserved and sometimes over-policed by very aggressive police officers. My thought was always, if you know that these people have a history of negativity, get them out of a particular area. Don't leave them there to further inflict damage upon anybody and or impugn the reputation of the city. Get rid of some of these officers, like Brother Kwanzaa mentioned. He knew of an officer that had been transferred from L.A. to other areas who was involved in the Rodney King deal. Those guys never should have been employed again in law enforcement. We see where other departments hire guys that have inflicted injury upon people in questionable situations. Those guys should never be allowed to be and be certified by the state that they live in to be police officers again. That's a state mandate. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Okay.
Brother Kwesi.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that, that's when I started law enforcement, you know, I was pretty excited and happy just from the training when you get out of recruit school and you're going to help people. And you do a lot of that. You do a lot of that. You help a lot of people that need help and so forth. But then you see the ugly thing. And everybody works with an officer and a dozen officers that are criminals, but they are allowed to do these things, and this is the history of law enforcement. This is just what goes on, and you learn that once, and one of the reasons why it continues, because you then look at the bottom line, and the bottom line is, okay, I'm going to go home at the end of the night, and I'm going to have a nice paycheck at the end of the week, and then I'm going to have a pension, and I'm going to make $60,000 a year.
If I work for MPD and I'm in my fourth year with overtime, I'm going to make $128,000. So I'm not going to give that money up. You know, so it becomes job security. Because if I tell on my white counterparts or anybody else that does something wrong, I'm going to lose that job. And I've never had it so good. I'm going to help some people, but I'm going to hurt some other people. And that's just the nature of law enforcement. And that's in North Carolina. That is all over. I've done a show on so many incidents, you know, these officers just doing the worst things to people. And, you know, they're not being punished, you know, in the least of it. And you, like I said, you don't find black officers running down white people. Now, and beating up white people. You don't hear stories like that. And you won't hear stories like that because they know that they're done. Now, in this case, you know, they make that mistake because white officers do it all the time. But look at all the concern that we're getting. They don't have that concern and consideration over a black person when he's killed by white cops. They don't have it. But right now, as he's killed by a black cop, we got this big discussion going on. That's a bunch of crap, I think, right? I mean, just how it's framed and set up. I know what we're doing, but in regards to why now? Why now? I mean, we understand, a lot of us, but, you know, like Amos Wilson said, the white man's self-defense is the black man's hatred of each other. And this is what we're witnessing. Mm. Dr. Bridges talks about it, you know, in his book. I mean, this is what we're dealing with. And then we have so many people that work the job that will not tell the truth, even when they're retired. I had a show called Warrior's Way, Continuing the Fight. And I used to try to get these officers, and they would talk about all the horror and everything that they went through and everything like that, but they wouldn't come on the show, and they're retired. They're not going to say it.
Wow.
We have a black mayor. We have a black chief, and they're going to keep their mouths shut. You know
what? But brothers, this just didn't start, right?
I understand what you're saying. Now, I'm going to respond quickly to that one. I've seen a lot of things, and I felt like there were people in the command staff that should be aware of incidents. I never hesitated to contact those individuals that I knew I could trust being from this city, and I knew these guys are from this city, and they could be forwarded information. Now, I was never overly concerned with the guys I work with in the sense of I'm going to have to defend them. I made sure if I was there, I was working for the city and protecting, how do I put it, protected that particular neighborhood from any nut aggressive officer. There were ways to deal with these officers. We dealt with them. We dealt with the police chief's ex-son, the ex-police chief's son here, in a situation in the courthouse that I witnessed, and he was dealt with. He was no longer employed. We have mechanisms in place for an officer to reach out and contact people of trust. Dr. Bridges is aware.
It's very selective. That way.
You have to be selective on who you talk with, not necessarily in terms of thinking in terms of the longevity of your personal self. It's all about your personal beliefs. If you see things that shouldn't be occurring, tell somebody. There are mechanisms in place to deal with that for a lot of departments. And again, in a progressive area, what Brother Kwanzaa went through, being the first and probably the only one for a while, I understand what he's saying. But by the time I came along here, there must have been 200 officers ahead of me. And a lot of this stuff that you see simply was not tolerated. It became these people were weeded out and got rid of. Some were flat out fired.
Well, let's go to training.
The most rarest police department I ever heard of. I just, and I've been traveling and I've been around. So back in the 80s, No, I'm sorry, in the 90s. You had New York Police Department. They had 30-something officers indicted, some of them for drug trafficking and some for killing and setting up other officers to be killed. And, that's the history of policing. So when you tell me that, like, there's laws in place and so forth, I understand it, but there's also a culture of people. You think of the George Floyd incident. They don't talk about it. The coroner said that George Floyd died of fentanyl. He lied. So we're not just talking law enforcement, police officers. We're talking about the whole system, from the EMTs, judges, and so forth. I mean, that is just how it's done. So you might clean up something around your department, but, you know, systematically,
right,
different story.
So there, again, is a system that we're facing. Let's bring Dr. Bruce back in and really talk about the psychodynamics of this thing. So we know we have a system in place. Again, as people of color, African Americans who live in this country that have experienced centuries of this abuse, right? It's just a different way of doing it now. We're doing it to ourselves. Well, we've been doing that the whole time in slavery as well, where we would be led by the master or the overseer to do this kind of work on ourselves. Dr. Bruce, what in
and you
the,
see too,
like, dynamic piece?
Yeah, and one thing too is as when I was discussing earlier about the way that we're taught and the way that we're trained in this system and this society, and all of us on the panel and people who are probably on hold for calling in, we were all trained the same way, and that is they never ever. And this is why, and I'm going to relate what I'm about to say too to what's going on in Florida, which is about to hit the whole United States of America, and that is the subjugation or the stoppage of the teaching of Black history.
Yep.
And those who know what's going on, that's happening now. So they're trying to put down anything that actually tells the truth about this system and about what Black people have gone through. They're trying not to let that come forward. That's what DeSantis is doing in Florida, and also, as I said before, with the 1619 Project with Nicole Hannah Jones, and all over the country, that's what's happening. And that's what happened to us as children growing up in terms of our minds. They always told us about a Booker T. Washington and a George Washington Carver. Why did they tell us about a Booker T. Washington and a George Washington Carver while not at the same time telling us about a Nat Turner and a Denmark Vesey and a Gabriel Prosser?
Right.
The reason is because, and to those who are not familiar with those people, the reason is because George Washington Carver and Booker T. Washington were basically people who were working inside the system for the betterment of Black people, though in a quiet and easygoing manner. But at the same time, there was a Nat Turner who picked up a gun. There was a Denmark Vesey who picked up a gun. There was a Gabriel Prosser in Henrico County, Virginia, who also organized enslaved men, and they armed themselves to fight against this system. So this system never wants us to show a Black man or a Black woman who is standing strong against it, because you might try yourself to imitate Nat Turner or Denmark Vesey. You might try to imitate Sister Sojourner Truth and try to really stand up and speak out against something. Look at Colin Kaepernick, a president, the example. Look at Kaepernick stood up. You see what happened here? They want to make examples. The town of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, it received its name because of the heads of Black men and Native American people that were put on posts, the batons in Louisiana, the red blood of the baton, Baton Rouge killings. You see, they have never wanted Black people to stand up. If you're going to be a singer, just be a singer. Don't speak out against anything. Look at what happened when, on a very small level, when Marvin Gaye, and everybody knows this story, when Marvin Gaye made What's Going On, Barry Gordy didn't want him to make that song because of what it was saying against the system. You see, Barry Gordy was trying to produce Negroes with wigs and makeup and make them acceptable by white society, and Marvin Gaye was rocking the boat by saying, What's Going On? And the words of the song were words that were questioning the system. So whenever you question the system of white Americans, Brother Kwasi said, nobody wants that. And that is the case that we're dealing with now today. And it has been going on. Look at the jump out squads they had in Washington, D.C., where men would come on, come up in cars and jump out of the cars and harass a black man who might be shooting crap in the alley or who might be dealing a little drugs and take their money from them and then ingrace themselves with the money to add to what they're getting paid anyway. Look at the jump out squads. Look at the Scorpion, I think, that Brother Monster talked about. And look at what happened with the sister in Buffalo, New York, who spoke out against what was going on in the police climate or police culture in Buffalo, New York. She spoke out. So you, as a black man or black woman, go along with the system. Don't question anything. Accept it and be a Negro, and you'll be okay in America. But you'll have a problem if you stand up like Stokely Carmichael did or like H. Rap Brown did. You have a problem if you stand like Malcolm, because they don't want any opposition to the system of white supremacy, and anyone who brings about an opposition to it, you are going to be in trouble.
Thank you, Dr. Bruce. You're listening live to the psychodynamics of black self-annihilation in the service of white domination or white supremacy, right? The panel discussion here today, we got two retired officers who have been on various police forces in different capacities, talking about the reality of the experiences as they have seen them. I want to just talk for a minute before we go to the lines about the black on black piece. So we have black, we know that in various cities, particularly where there are majority of blacks, that we have an issue with black on black crime, right? So we, when something happens like George Floyd or Rodney King, whereas the white officers, for example, there's protests, right, like what's going on now. But every day black people are killing black people, but we don't protest that. So and in terms of the psychodynamics, Dr. Bruce, what is actually happening that we don't protest ourselves? We'll protest law enforcement, but we won't protest ourselves. What do you think? And then I'll ask the other former officers as well, and Brother George.
Yeah, go ahead, Brother George. Go ahead.
You want me to jump in there?
I thought Brother George was. Yeah, I just hold my comments.
Yeah,
I just hold my comments because we.
Okay.
Go ahead, brother.
This is Brother Kwazi. I'm also a community activist, and I'm involved in a lot of the incidents that goes on here with the shootings and killings of people in the black community. And we do protest. We put on different marches and so forth, but they just don't get the coverage.
Okay.
And, you know, unless we, you know, there's a brother called King Rich. With the original Black Panther. He calls himself the biggest panther in the jungle. Now, he gets a lot of ink and coverage because he travels and he does a lot of stuff, and they kind of follow him. But most of us that do what we do, they know who we are when we go to these marches, because they we're labeled as peacemakers or violence interrupters. So when they see us, they know that we're out here, but we're trying to keep the peace. And so the police kind of give us a pass, so to speak. And some of them know us, and some of them that don't know us and stuff, the other people kind of feel them in. But we do protest, and, you know, we try to come up with solutions and programs, and we do things, and it's just not talked about as much. But we do have a lot of these different programs going. We have the 414 for Life, and those are a lot of people that were served time for different issues, some homicide, some drug trafficking, this and that. But they're in the communities, they're in the schools, and they're getting paid now, I think. Now, I do what I do, but I don't get paid when I go to these different places and stuff. I just put my time in and try to help where I can. So
okay.
We do go out there and do things, but then we just don't get that kind of coverage.
All right. Well, let's go over to the lines now. We're going to open the lines up, 845-277-9250 for questions, comments, or statements. I'm going to start with area code 804-1683. Yes.
Brother Marvin.
Yes, sir.
I had dashed to the bathroom, you know, so I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to the lines now, and then when we come back, we'll spring back over there to you. 804-1683. Thank you, Brother George. Question or comments? What are your thoughts on this situation and what you heard today in terms of the dialogue? Welcome to the show.
Brothers, peace. Lord knows we
peace,
need it, right?
Peace, brother.
Yeah, love. Yeah. Yes, sir. Look, a couple things right quick. One is we don't remember our past. We forget real easy what has happened to us before. Prime example, Richard Pryor made a joke in the 60s. Okay, in the 60s, Richard Pryor, I know it's not funny, but Richard Pryor said, you know, black police officers rougher on black folk than white police officers. Said, they, you know, have them in the headlock, hit them upside the head. I ain't losing my picture, nickel. You know, what Dr. Bruce and the brothers related to earlier. Money, not losing my pension, okay? But we have to learn from our past and things. I have not seen the video. I don't need to see the video. I see it every day. I see it every day in my neighborhood. I see it every day in this community where I work, in the schools, the children that come to the schools that I work, and what goes on in our neighborhoods, the drive-by shootings. I see it every day. There's nothing new to me. I'm going to get outraged over this one. There's another black life lost for nothing because of racism, because of hatred, and we're not learning, brothers. We're not learning from our past. We're not taking the proper action to deal with it. I said to some people yesterday at the school, I said, you know, my generation, and I'm 70 years old. Y'all know who know me know that. My generation, we fought for the wrong things. We fought for the wrong things. What we fought for and we didn't realize we were fighting for was the glorification of the white man. That's what we fought for. Every action we took was fighting for the glorification of the white man. We fought for the right to drink out the same water fountain that the white man drank out of. We fought to go to the same toilet that the white man go to. We fought to sit in the same in the theater down in the mezzanine where the white man sat to come out of the balcony. We fought for that. We fought to ride on front of the bus with the white man. We fought to have his babies with his daughter. We fought to go to school with his children. Everything we fought for was for his glorification. We fed into the superiority. Just think of that, brother. If another brother in the project took that approach with us, and I grew up in the project, if somebody say, here I am in school, and they say, you can't sit in that seat. Why not? That's shampoo seat. What? They can't drink out that water fountain. That's shampoo's water fountain. You can't go over there because that's shampoo you eat over there. Then we're going to say, who in the hell is shampoo? Who does nigga think he who died and left him in charge? We didn't do that with white folks. We prayed and prayed to God that we would get to be with white folks. We fought for the wrong thing, and we haven't learned from it to this day, brother. That's why this happens, and it'll keep happening, going to keep happening until we do something about it. And the one thing we need to do is we all talk about every show. We need to come together as a people. We need to unify. And like Dr. Bruce said earlier, and the other brother said, they weren't black police officers. They're not black-minded men. You know what I say they are. Dr. Bruce was nice. They were niggas.
You have unheard messages.
Exactly what they were.
Somebody
acting like niggas out there trained to act, you know? All right, brothers. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. Thank you, brother. Appreciate that.
Love it.
He said they're acting like niggas. Somebody's over there checking their unchecked message on that one. All right, let's go over to 919, area code 919-7789. 7789, you're live, you're on. Do you have a question, comment, or statement? Area code 919-7789, you're up. Do you have a question or comment?
I have a comment. First of all, I'm enjoying the show. And my comment is, what happened to the young man on the 7th of January, it didn't surprise me because that's been going on for a long time. Black officers beating black men. But it hasn't been too much said about it over the years because most of it was in black communities, so since it was in black communities, you know, nobody cared. But now, since this happened on the 7th, hopefully, you know, it will it will create dialogue and more people will, you know, realize that this has been going on for a long time, even in small communities. And just like Minister Farrakhan said years ago, the white man will give you a gun because he know you ain't going to shoot him. You're going to take it home and your mama, your brother. And it's happening right now, your sister or whatever. So that's similar to what happened the other day, even though they didn't use no gun. But if they could have, they probably would have. So it's sort of like a modern-day lynching, even though they didn't lynch him. But, you know,
true.
It was awful. But like Brother Bruce said, you know, in any community, urban community, whether it's in D.C. or Maryland or California or Milwaukee, that has always happened. These black officers, they get on the force. Because I remember when I was growing up, and they had a few black officers, and one just happened to get on the force that was in my neighborhood. And he was so authoritative, he would come around at 8 o'clock and try to run the young black boys off the street. It's 9 o'clock now. Y'all need to be in the house. And he was, I guess, trying to exert his authority. So like I said, it's been going on for a long time. These black officers, they get on the force, they get the badge, they got authority now where they never had it before. So they just feel like they can do whatever they want to, and that's what they did, and that's what they're still doing. So that's my comment. I just hope it's awakening. It'll be an awakening now for people to realize what's going on in this country against black brothers. Thank you.
Thank you, sister. Thank you. Amen to that. Thank you, sister. All right. Let's go over to Brother Kwesi and Brother Thaxton. She said the brothers have authority and power for the first time, and they're abusing it. What do y'all think about that?
Well, I'm going to address it. I grew up in a neighborhood where I saw black police officers all the time. Parked in front of my house, getting out, coming up on my porch, friendly men. I saw them at church. When it was time to go to work, they went to work. Most of the time, and a lot of times, they did things fair and square. Now, I've heard of and even witnessed an incident where I thought they were improper. Most of these guys were decent guys from this city. You do see guys who come along, and I can name three or four of them who were just simply authoritative people who just plain wanted the ability to dictate to other people their movements, their actions. They don't continue until nationally, it's recognized that behavior is no longer going to be tolerated.
Hmm. All right, Brother Kwesi.
Yes, there is a power dynamic that goes on when you have that type of authority. I mean, a lot of it goes, I mean, I'll put it this way. I mean, not that I'm not an attractive person back when I was 28 when I got hired, but when people see you in uniform, it's a different response, how they treat you, how they, you know, address you, and they think of you as a certain kind of person, you know, and whether you're that, and everybody kind of elevates you to another level. And so sometimes you may even do a better job just because people expect you to do a good job. You behave or you prepare yourself better just so that you look good for them. And I mean, I used to find so many officers, along with myself, I mean, we would do so much to get ready for the job, to look good in the uniform, go out on the street. It was a good feel. But there was always somebody. We always knew who that person was. That person wouldn't back you up on a call, and if they was on that call, they would make it worse, so we didn't want that person there. So you always had people that probably shouldn't have the job, but just like a school teacher or anything else, or a priest, or they shouldn't have the job, but you can't get rid of them.
And I think that's in the unions are, you know, just a major part of that. The police union is probably one of the most powerful things. And I think that when and it's all about dollars and cents, you know, and so if, because when these lawsuits, when they win these lawsuits for police bad actions and so forth, that's taxpayer dollars. But if they were to change this and say, all right, if an officer does this and he has this kind of thing, we're going to take 20% of his pay. And that's going to go back to the city or something or whatever. And the second offense is to be another 20%. So, you know, now he's only getting 60% of the from the money that he's working. And, you know, and it's about dollars and cents. People are going to respond differently based on the money. And that's why most people get the job. They're not working this job because they want to protect and serve. When they were in Texas and they had the opportunity to save all those kids and they let the white guy walk by another white police officer, he got on the radio and said, hey, can I take the shot? This guy's got a gun and he's going into the school. Now, would he would have asked that question if it was a black person? Of course not. But he let them go in, and then once they're in there, they're shooting, and you got all these trains. And I was on the squad team. I did all that, and I did entries and so forth. And they're waiting outside, listening to people getting shot for umpteen for almost 30 minutes or so, or maybe longer. That's ridiculous. And we all know that, but they're not addressing that like that. And so when you want to talk about some issues and so forth, and these are white officers. And they weren't going to put their lives on the line for Hispanic people. So let's look at that. Racism has a whole lot to play with every action that goes on in law enforcement. And I'll leave it at that.
All right, brother. All right, thank you. Let's go back to the lines. But again, right, we got some issues that we need to face collectively in terms of political action, right, about what we could do in terms of a modifying policing, right, and where and how monies are distributed, right? I know we need policing. Don't get that wrong, right? We need good, upstanding police to help enforce the law. All right, let's go on over to 919, last four, 8502. 8502, you're next. You have a question, comment, or statement about the topic at hand, psychodynamics of black self-annihilation. How you doing, brother? Welcome to the show.
Yes, good afternoon, Brother Marvin, and Hotep to all of your guests.
What's up,
this is Herbie White in Durham, North Carolina.
Hey, yeah, brother.
Brother Malcolm said, of all the disciplines, history is best suited to reward our research. So what is the historical relationship between law enforcement and the black community?
Slave catchers.
There you go. From the very beginning, what was the relationship? Were they there? Were they ever there to protect and serve? I'm not talking about a good black cop, a nice. I'm talking about the systematic relationship. The police department, the court system, the district attorneys, all of that stuff. They're there for containment. And that's the objective of the police department. There may be individuals that's trying to do something else. But you're not going to change that objective.
I heard
that's not going to happen. This is America. And unfortunately, some officers come and become part of that objective. The question is, how many complaints did these officers have in the past? This is not the first time they did it. I don't even know, but I can tell you that. This is not the first time that they did this. They might not kill nobody, but this is not the first time they did this.
Yeah, it seemed like a pattern of behavior. All right, Brother Herbie.
Because
thank you.
They were hysterical. None of the five of them said, wait a minute, chill out. I don't want to lose my job. We can get in trouble. We might be film. They might be filming us. Cool out, chill out. They were just confident, totally confident that they could do what they was doing without any problem.
All right. Thank you, Brother Herbie. Brother Thaxton, I hear you back there. You want to jump in? Thank you, Brother Herbie.
I've been very curious to find out the length of time and service that these guys have and how many complaints collectively or individually they each have. I just find it hard to believe that a single man, and normally when you work in the pack, the simple tack is the first guy go up to the one, the second guy go on the cover side, on the other side of the car. Why five guys are out on that individual, I feel like there's some information, there's an information gap here. I have questions about the legality of the stop. Was he targeted? What is his experience with the police? What is the police experience with him? I'm just very curious to find out. But I clearly say that those officers went way beyond their training, their standards. I don't give a thing on where they are. They went beyond.
All right, thank you. Let's continue to listen to the caller's response. Let's go over to 919. Last three is 3347. 919-3347. You're next. Do you have a question, comment, or statement? Welcome to the show. All right, let's move on down to Eric Hope 470. 8310 is the last four of your number. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question, comment, or statement on today's topic?
Yeah, good afternoon.
8310.
Yeah, how you doing, brother?
Welcome to the show.
Bridget and, thank you. And brother Crazy. Well, I just I just want to make it clear to the listening audience about what we're dealing with. This is supposed to be a country of laws, right?
Right.
That was the question, right?
Yes.
Well, it is. I don't want nobody to get it mistaken. This is the country of laws. And laws is just an acronym. The acronym is Legally Allowing White Supremacy Laws.
Mm-hmm.
So we're putting everything in the proper perspective when you talk about law enforcement. They're going to support white supremacy. That's the way it has been. That's where it's going to always be. So we have to understand that the dynamics in which we, as black people, be at service to white people is to fulfill their agenda. Is how can I please master? How can I please my white master? They don't think of it in those terms, but that's what you're doing. So let's just keep it all in the proper perspective. Laws is just an acronym. And can't nobody convince me anything different, because if anybody got a better definition than that, please offer it to me, please. But thank
all right,
you
brother. Where
are
you calling from?
I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia.
All right. Atlanta in the house. Thank you for calling, sir. And keep going.
Sure.
I like what you're saying. Keep listening. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go over to Slido for just a minute. And this question is directed to Dr. Bruce. Dr. Bruce, please discuss the system of white domination and how it impacts our current realities.
All right, just to briefly put it, as Brother Monster said in one of his answers, it take a long time to discuss it, but what happens is, I've actually said it before, is that we have always been brought up in a system. And there's a brother I think I was talking to earlier today, maybe he's on, but he put it very well, talking about how we were brought up in a system and the new rope or the new form of destruction, the new form of lynching is in the classroom. And in that classroom, as a child, we are taught to always fear and taught that we are subservient to white people and to stay in our place. Not necessarily literally, not necessarily straight up as I said it, but when you begin to, as I talk about in the first chapter in the preface of my book, when you grow up seeing everything in charge in the textbooks, on the board signs, in television, every place a person that you see of authority is always your oppressor or always a person who is in charge of you, then you begin to take the position of secondary, you see. So the system of white supremacy always lets you know in one way, form, or fashion that they are in charge. They've taken this country from the native people who were already here. They've carved it out in the West. They set up colonies in the eastern part of this country and all over America, and they have taken charge of this country, and they are going to exert their supremacy over everything. And we just have a place here in a system that does not belong to us, that's not to our advantage to follow or to go along with, and we're just in that particular place in this system of white supremacy. And it just depends on how we're going to react towards this system. Are we going to just cower down and accept everything and just be diligent to this system? Or are we going to stand up and speak out and be human beings? Or are we just going to be a football player? Are we just going to be a common everyday school teacher? Are we going to be a common everyday plant worker? Or are we going to be a human being, as W.B. Du Bois said, and stand up for what is right in this country? And as I always ask the questions, we talked about, we discussed the situation with Kyrie Irving, as we discussed the situation with black athletes and those multi-million-dollar celebrities. When do you get to the point to where you say, I have enough money, I have to stand up and be a man and exert myself and my humanity for my people? When do you get to that point? But white supremacy can buy us off. And that's what happens to people on these police forces. Don't take much. Give them a little decent salary, something they're not used to, and they'll do anything for the master to get that little paycheck. But even more so than that, on a higher level, those people with the 7-8-figure salaries, the celebrities in this country, oh, man, they're, of course, going to bow down to the system. So, anyway, let's go to the phone lines, brother. That's my answer to that.
All right. All right. The sister said something that struck me was that she said another modern day lynching. That's something to think about as we continue to deal with these issues as they hit us and we face them. Again, I think we have to have agendas. Right. The agendas are important, that we begin to take action, right, collective action across the country. Not just protesting when a situation happened, but we're going to have to correct some stuff at home. Correction for direction at home. Let's go over to area code 334-0148. You're next. You're live. You're on the Empowerment Hour. Do you have a question, a comment, a statement?
Real quickly, thank you for taking my call, and good afternoon to everyone's on the phone. I like to twist the dial just a tad bit in that I like to take things from the nature point of view. And before I start, all honor and respect to Bass Reeves, the very first black law enforcement officer in this country. So all honor and respect
all right.
to the ancestors.
I say.
With regards to nature, I'd like to ask all of you all who are on the line to play a little small little idea with me. If I came into your house, meek, a male, into your house, the house that you govern, do you think I would ever be able to meet or get to your level at all? I think the answer to that is no, because of the fact that no man will allow another man to come into his house to dominate his house, the house that he built. And so to couple this all with everything that has transpired up to this point, that we have to come to a realization that we did not create this system of laws, as one of the callers mentioned earlier. We didn't create this. we are just following along to get along. We know that that's what's going on. We know that there's an element called capitalism that was created.
Mm-hmm.
That, yes, we have no other choice but to keep our mouths shut in order for us to keep that roof over our heads, to keep the lights and gas on, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think that if we really knew, if we really know the beginning, then the end won't be so troubling. And so how well do we know what we think we know in the beginning of all of this? And that's why I've referred to nature as a course or a line of action to take along with all the other comments that have been made. Thank you so very much for taking my call.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you. And keep listening. There are so many themes, right, that continue to come out as we have this domination. And just a few things come to my mind. Money comes up, right, in terms of pensions, in terms of salaries, in terms of overtime, right? Power comes into mind in terms of or into play as there's a power dynamic that goes on in terms of law enforcement, whether it's white or black. And then respect. Right. And that's on both sides in terms of respect for the African-American, wherever he or she is, but also how we respect or disrespect each other. And then there's the key element of white supremacy that seems to be fueling it all. And we don't get to that point because you'll blame the brothers. But again, I'm looking over a slide and I want to talk to this point. I want to see what the panel has to say about this. The Slido says the color was black and the mind was white. We are truly and have been truly conditioned. The next one is a racist mentality is driving our actions. We are in the need to recapture our minds, selves, families, and community. Brother Baxter, what do you think about that?
Okay, repeat your question. I'm sorry.
Again, in terms of the conditioning. Right, the mental conditioning that we're in terms of our behavior, right? Both in terms of what white supremacy has created, but again, how we conduct ourselves and behavior toward each other. What are your thoughts?
Well, that goes right back to black on black crime. How we conduct ourselves simply depends upon how we were raised. A lot of neighborhoods, a lot of people simply never get out the hood, no matter their conditions, no matter what their status is, they never get out the hood. I've always felt that growing up, you understand what's going on in your neighborhood, what's going on around you. As Dr. Bridges can tell you, we've seen successful people come from all over with different economic backgrounds. And we will continue to see it. Personally, that's all I'm going to say on that subject.
Okay. All right. Brother Kwesi.
Hey, I'm in total agreement with that. I believe that in most black officers that I've dealt with do not respond as if they were black people. And when I say that, because I work in the suburbs, and usually I'll meet other black officers, and they might be that first officer or second officer on that department, which is a smaller department and is predominantly white. And we would have in-services and classes, and those guys would not sit next to me because they didn't want their white counterparts to feel that they had to, that they might be talking about them, you know, when we get together and stuff like that. So they wanted to make them feel comfortable. And so, and that's more important than trying to make me feel comfortable when, you know, it's only maybe three of us in the class or two of us in a class of 40 people. And, but we can't sit together because we don't want white people to feel uncomfortable. And that mentality, just goes on and it just grows and not knowing who we are, the system in regards to, you know, everybody is culturally connected with the exception of a lot of the black people, you know, where are you from? Well, I'm African-American. You know, no, I'm from Kenya. I'm from Africa. You talk to somebody from Italy, they'll tell you they're from Sicily or
somewhere and this and that. They're going to tell you about language, and they're going to talk this and talk to fools and this and that. We can't do those kind of things. So we have this disconnect. And because we have this disconnect, and we're taking on these personalities of a lot of these people that we work with, and like I said, they have no love for us. And we, like I said, we want to go along and get along, and we take on a lot of those ways of thinking and doing. And we know that that's allowed, and that's okay. And you can grow on the department by doing those things that way. You know, you had a Sheriff Clark out of the Milwaukee area, and I happened to, he did a lot of good programs, and but here's a black man that was well known, but he ran as a Democrat, but you know, all of his actions was that of a Republican, and then later on that came out a little later on, but here's a guy that was very dominant about black people not measuring up and so forth and this and that. And white people loved him because he could say the N-word and it was okay. And he would say that kind of stuff to put us down. And but that was a law enforcement figure. And they loved him, you know.
All right. So, well, thank you, brother. I mean, we're getting close to time. Now,
yeah.
So I want to wrap this one up, right, as we get close to the end of this show. Thank you all for joining us, right? It's been a wonderful conversation, a wonderful dialogue. I thank you for joining us today, right, to give your input and feedback. So I want to start with Brother Quace. Final comments from you, Brother Thaxton, Dr. Bruce, and then Brother George. Final comments.
I just think we need to understand our blackness, who we are. We're African people, nothing else, no compromise. Let's be us. Let's know who we are. Find out. That's it. Go ahead.
All right. All right, brother.
Okay. Just like Dr. Bridges used to tell me, we are an African people. We've learned, we've adopted, we've adapted. And I hope we continue to do that. But do not forget our simple roots.
All right. Dr. Bruce, thank you, brother.
Yes, I just want to quote Brother, I want to thank first of all Brother Quaz and also Brother Marshall Thaxton for being a part of the program this evening and making it a good program, I think, Brother Marvin. And I'd like to just end in the words of Brother Neely Fuller, the teacher of the late, great Francis Cress Wilson. He said that when you don't understand the system of white supremacy, then everything else in this society which you encounter will only cause you total confusion. You must understand the system in which you live. If you do not, everything else will cause you total confusion.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Brother George, final comments before we get out of here.
Well, I learned a great deal, you know, about policing from a black officer's perspective, and I enjoyed the show, you know, and appreciate the brothers participating with us today. So it's back to you, brother.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brother George, and thank you, brother, so much for your input. Here's the wrap, right? We got a lot of issues to face on a lot of different levels. But it's up to us, each of us individually, to do the work that has to be done collectively. But it has to be done mentally and emotionally, right? How many times do we have to see each other tormented in the streets? How many funerals do we have to go through or to? How many candlelight vigils? How many young people do we have to lose? How often do we have to continue this cycle of abuse? Right? Even amongst ourselves, we got to do the work. I'm asking you to make a commitment to change the system as it stands, or we just need to have a collective plan for departure. It's up to us. Money, power, respect, disrespect, but most of all, let's look at how we can continue to work together to recapture our African minds where we got humanity in the forefront of our actions and our ways, and that we love each other
as we love ourselves, as we love our neighbors. Have a great day, brothers and sisters. Peace and blessings. Thank you, brothers.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Peace and blessings.